Really? Really? Well, you know, think about it. You know, I love this line right here. I know the context is a little different. Welcome to the jungle. It gets worse every day. I hate when I hear people say, oh, man, you know, I'm going to put some money aside for a rainy day, or, you know, our world's in a good place. Listen, it is not. All right? I don't know if you've met people lately. It's a jungle out there. And you know, it's a little different context of what it means to bring you to your knees. But I see people every day that the world brings them to their knees. And you know, we live in a jungle, and it's one of the reasons that we're talking about why advancement is needed, why God is always about new things, why God is always wanting to redeem the world where it is, because it's a jungle out there. Businesses, churches, lives, marriages, you know, crumble in moments where it used to take years. And so we're looking at how God always wants to be doing the new. We're in week number 2 of the series, Advancement, and how God calls us to new frontiers. And today we're going to be taking a look at pioneers and settlers and the role of pioneers and settlers in the advancement of frontiers in our lives. So my name's Kurt, by the way. It's great to meet you if you're here for the first time today. If you want to drop me an email, you can email me at pj@crosspointweb. No, not really. If you want to email me, my email's on the website. But really excited you're here this morning. Let's pray before we dive into what we're talking about today. God, I'm thankful that we get to talk about things like this, that you can teach us what it looks like to take new frontiers. And I just ask that you would allow our time to be helpful. I ask that our time would be applicable, and most of all, that our time would be filled with encouragement from you. And wherever we are, whatever frontier it is that we're going after, that you're calling us to in our lives, just use our time however you see fit. Pray these things in your name and according to your character. Well, you know, whenever you hear the term pioneer settlers, you probably think of the Old West, right? I mean, that's what I immediately think, too. I think of cowboys and Westerns. I wasn't really a fan of Western movies, if I can be really honest. What I was a fan of, though, was September 13th, 1893. This was the last day in America that land was given away. It was known as the last land run. And on September 13th, 1893, it was kind of like finders keepers, right? A pistol went off, and people were ready to go out and stake their claim to find their land that was going to be given to them for free, and they were going to build a homestead. And it was a big day. And one of the things we know about that day is that both pioneers and settlers were both a part of that. In fact, pioneers, they were there when the pistol went off, and that gun's in the air, and they're ready to go out on foot and by horse to find that perfect piece of land that they're going to lay claim on, the claim is their homestead. And one of the interesting things is what we learned about them is if they didn't have on their team settlers coming closely behind them with all the Constanoga wagons, is that they're called? All the infrastructure and farming equipment, everything they needed to build a homestead, then, you know, that land would actually be taken away from them in a matter of about 12 months. And what we know about settlers on that day is if they weren't teamed up with a pioneer, as much infrastructure as they brought with them, by the time they actually got to the land, there was no land left. And so what we learned from that is that in every great endeavor needs both pioneers and settlers. Now, we see this all throughout the Bible. We see this, you know, at the very beginning with like Moses, who was called to be the leader of this nation of Israel, to take the people who were in slavery out of the nation of Egypt. And God says, I want you to take them out of slavery. I want you to take them through the wilderness, through the desert, through all these challenges. And Moses was a visionary. And yeah, even though he was a visionary, he did not lead the people of Israel out of slavery alone. God said, I'm going to partner you with Aaron. And Aaron was his brother. Now, Aaron was also the first priest of the nation of Israel, so he brought all kinds of structures and ways for people to understand how to connect with God. And so Moses was the pioneer, Aaron was the settler. We see this in the next generation later. We see that Moses didn't actually make it to the promised land. He actually died in process. And so he was replaced. He was succeeded by a guy by the name of Joshua. Joshua was a warrior. He knew what it meant to take territory. And so he was a pioneer. And so the second generation leader assigned to the nation of Israel was another pioneer. And God says, you're not going to do this on your own. You're going to partner with this man named Eleazar, who was Aaron's son. And so again, we see pioneer and settler working together to take new frontiers. We see this with the first set of kings in the nation of Israel, David and Solomon. David, if you've been with us before, you've heard a lot about David. David was a manly man. He was a warrior. He was adventuresome. He understood what it meant to take new territories. And one of the things he decided he wanted to do, he said, God, you know, I want to make a dwelling place for you so that you can connect with your people. And so he created this like elaborate tent, basically, and he said God dwells here, and people could come into that place and they could connect with God. Now, when David settled in Jerusalem, he decided he was going to build a permanent structure. He said, I'm going to build a permanent temple for you, God. And God said, no, that's not your job. I want you to be out like taking new frontiers. He said, I'm actually going to raise up a different leader. I'm actually going to raise up your son, Solomon, who was known to be the wisest man in all the Bible. He said, I want to raise up Solomon to architect my temple, to build my temple. He said, I need you out, you know, conquering new territories. Let Solomon build and settle the temple. And so again, we see pioneer and settler. You know, we move to the New Testament. We have people like the Apostle Paul who you know, is responsible for more of the New Testament than any other writer. And yet the Apostle Paul was constantly out sharing the good news of Christ. He was constantly going to new communities, talking about how Jesus died and rose again. And here's what's unique about Paul. Everywhere that Paul went, he would establish a new church. He would tell people about Jesus and about the death and resurrection and how they can actually know God. And when he would establish that church, he was in the process of also training up or mentoring or building into leaders, guys like Timothy and Titus. And whenever he would raise up a new church, every community he went to, he'd start a new church, and he'd get it going, and then he'd leave somebody like a Timothy or somebody like a Titus there to actually grow the church, to settle the church, to bring stability to the church. And so again, partners and or pioneers and settlers partnering together. Even Jesus. Jesus is known as like the pioneer and the settler. Take a look at what it says in Hebrews chapter 12. It says, looking to Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. So Jesus even understood that there is a need for pioneering. Jesus, you know, kind of blazed the trail of what it looked like to have relationship with God. And not only to show us what it looked like, but he actually did something no one else could ever do, went to places no one else could ever go by dying, by going to a grave, and then eventually rising back to life. And this gives us a model of this new pathway of what it means to know God. You know, there's other examples we see, outside the biblical world, like in the business realm. There's guys like, you know, Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak, right? I mean, we've all benefited in one way, shape, or form from Apple or iPads or something. In fact, here's a picture I found on the internet of Wozniak and Jobs, which actually looks a lot like Ashton Kutcher, don't you think? Which, that actually is Ashton Kutcher, believe it or not. I don't know where that came from, but here, look at this. This is an interesting picture. This is actually a picture of Steve Jobs, a real one. Isn't it crazy how much they look alike right there? You know, Jobs was the dreamer. He was the pioneer. He was always going after the new territory. Wozniak, the guy on his right there, on his left, your right, he was the infrastructure guy. He was the guy that actually made it all happen. And we see this in the sports world as well. Now, this is going to date myself a little bit right here, okay? But if you grew up in my generation, who didn't love these two guys right here? Pippen and Jordan, right? I mean, these were like the... I had the Air Jordans, right? I had the first generation Jordans, the black and red and white ones. I remember being on the driveway, you know, doing the Jordan fadeaway, trying to, you know, nail that thing. And what's interesting is, here's the thing. There's no Jordan without Pippen, right? If you understand the two of them, Jordan was only who he was because he had the stabilizer that was with them. Even the coach that led them to all these championships, Phil Jackson, you know, he was a pioneer, but he didn't pioneer alone. He recently released a book called 11 Rings. Get that, 11 Rings, Phil Jackson won. And he attributes 9 of them to a guy you've probably never heard of, this guy right here. The guy in the middle of this picture, the white-haired guy there, is a guy by the name of Wes Winter. Wes, probably you've never heard of him, no, not somebody who rings a bell in your mind. He's the architect of what's called the Triangle Offense. Maybe you've heard of that. Phil Jackson says 9 of our championships were attributed to Wes Winter being able to stabilize, develop a plan that allowed me to lead our team to 9 of the 11 championships. You know, we see this in other realms. We see great partnerships like Han Solo and Chewbacca, right? I mean, Han Solo wanted to go places, and Chewbacca, if he didn't fix a ship, nobody was going anywhere, right? I mean, that's just how it worked. Now, let's just do something fun. Let's just do our best Chewbacca impression right here, all right? On the count of three, ready? One, two, three. Yeah. Now, anybody ever wondered what a Wookiee church would sound like? That's it right there. That's what it would sound like the whole time. All right, but pioneer and settler, I mean, every great endeavor requires both a pioneer and a settler. Now, let me ask you the question. Which one are you? I want you to think about, which one am I? You know, which one are you naturally bent toward? I mean, it's probably not black and white for you. I have a little bit of both. I have a bent toward one. But, you know, which one would you say is your natural wiring? Now, if you're not quite sure, let me give you a few other characteristics to help you define these right here. So here's what pioneers. Pioneers are catalysts of change. Settlers are catalysts of stability. So pioneers are always on the edge of change. They're actually usually going after and creating the change. And settlers, on the other hand, they bring change or bring stability to the change. They're the ones that make sure you don't lose the land, the new land hold for in the first 12 months. That the thing you're working on actually gets off the ground. Here's another characteristic. Pioneers are energized by new ideas. Settlers are energized by long-term planning. So pioneers say things like, man, we got to go after this idea. Nobody is serving this sector of our culture. Nobody's meeting the needs of this particular group of people with this particular product. Settlers, on the other hand, they say, hey, that's awesome. I get excited when we have a plan on how we're going to get from point A to point B. All right, we need both, pioneers and settlers. Here's another characteristic. Pioneers bring flexibility. Settlers bring predictability. All right, so pioneers get bored with implementation. All right, I mean, maybe you're married to somebody like this, right? I mean, you're working on something, some project you've agreed on, and just the time it gets off the ground, they're like, hey, let's go do something else. Anybody, don't have to raise your hands, no nudging, all right? But you know what I'm talking about. You're like, oh, let's work on something else. Now, on the other hand, settlers, pioneers get bored with implementation. They're like, come on, we got other frontiers to conquer. Settlers, on the other hand, they get bored with brainstorming. They're kind of like, enough on the new ideas already, okay? Let's hone in on one. Let's focus on one. And let's actually try to, make it come into fruition. And it's interesting because, you see, I think a lot of times, whenever we err to the extreme of one of these two, we actually find that our success is limited. All right? We limit our success because pioneers can fall into the trap of their dreams never getting off the ground. Because they need a settler that says, hey, let's take your idea and bring some organization to it. Let's bring some stability. Let's work a process out here so it can actually come into fruition. See, settlers, on the other hand, they fall into the trap of always choosing the predictable, of always choosing the familiar, and they never venture out to the new frontier. And so you need both in order for advancement to happen. Now, as you think about these, gave you a little more detail. Just out of curiosity, how many of you would say you are pioneers? Let me see your hands real high. Let me see them real high just so I can, because I have a hard time seeing. All right, how many of you would say you are settlers? Settlers. Interesting. Man, that is amazing. I mean, it's almost true to the number. You know, across the culture, numbers would say 30% of us are pioneers and 70% of us are settlers. And that's okay because, listen, not everybody can be pioneering. Let me say that better. Not everybody should be pioneering, all right? Not all of us are wired that way. You're just not, all right? And so if you're a settler, all right, if you're a settler, listen, you might be sitting there thinking, man, that's kind of a negative term. Who wants to settle for anything? Well, let me help you out with that, all right? Don't think of it as a negative term because I want you to go back to the West, all right? What you know about the West when the pioneers and the settlers were going out and beginning to claim the Western territory, all right? Here's the thing. Pioneers and settlers both went West. All right, they both moved. They both went to the new frontier. We have a different term that we call people who never left the safety of what they knew. You know what they're called? Europeans. They're called Europeans. I know some of you aren't going to like that, but God bless America, right? And because, I actually got that, just so you know, I'm not hard, if you're from Europe, one of my buddies is from Europe, and he said, can I hoop and holler on that? Listen, I actually heard that joke from a guy named Mike Breen, who is a leader from the UK, and he's now committed his life to training leaders in the United States, Christian leaders, on how to take new frontiers. And the reason he said that is this right here. He said, America has the best leadership leadership gene pool of anyone in the world. Now, you know why he said that? He said that because he said, you know, there are people here in America, and every single person in their lineage somewhere has someone in their family of origin, their family history, their family tree, that at some point in their lives left the unknown and went to the new. And so it's just in our genes. I mean, and it doesn't matter, you know, if in your family, you know, history, you had somebody who went from the East and moved to the West, or left a country that was known to go to this new frontier known as America, or even for those who were brought here against their will as slaves, which is quite fascinating because, you know, one of the fulcrum moments in our nation's history was about 50 years ago when Dr. Martin Luther King, a black pastor from Atlanta, said, you know, there's something not right about this, and everybody should be free, including blacks. And this just speaks to the notability of our desire to frontier and to advance and to be people who go after new frontiers. Every great endeavor requires settlers and pioneers. Now, if you haven't guessed at this point, I tend to err on the pioneering front. That kind of is where my bent is. But I have settler tendencies. But, you know, I'm always interested in going after new things. I'm always, you know, saying, hey, what else can we do? I get bored with implementation. And I've always been that way. I've been that way since a kid. I can remember as a boy, I loved climbing trees. I remember this one tree I could only get so high. I wanted to go to the frontier, the top of that tree. And so I loaded my pocket full of nails. I grabbed some of my dad's 1/8-inch plywood that was cut in real thin strips and a hammer in the other hand, started climbing the tree. When I got to the point that I always got stuck, I just started nailing steps up the tree to about 40 feet with no plan of how to get down, you know, and I'm screaming, and my parents, because I wasn't an implementer. I wanted to go, but I didn't know how, I didn't think through how I was going to get down. I can't tell you how many projects I've started that I've never finished. And I've learned along the way. I mean, I've grown as an implementer. I've learned that I have to complete it and bring people into my life. And the first church I served at was one that was not really in a style that I wanted to be at long term, and yet I interned there. And then they called a pastor to come to that church who is the father of one of my friends here at Crosspoint, Jen Wired. Her dad was my first boss. And they called him to that church to change the church, to steer it in a new direction. And I thought, man, I want to be a part of that. In fact, one of the things we had the chance to do was we started this ministry for college students. And we sat right across the street from a campus. In fact, the front doors of our church were less than 100 yards from the main campus administrative building of Anderson University. And yet, they had like 2,300 students across the street, and virtually none of them ever graced the doors of our church. And we said, you know, that's kind of a problem. So we went across the street and met with the president and said, we're not making an impact on this campus. What could we do to make a significant, you know, kingdom dent into this campus? And he said something fascinating to us. He said, it's interesting because he said about 70% of our students live within a 35-mile radius of campus, so most of them go home on weekends. So they're not even around, you know, when you guys are doing services on weekends. And we said, well, what time do they get back? And he said, well, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock on Sunday evening, the campus begins to repopulate. And we said, well, what if we do a service for college students, 50 minutes long at 8 o'clock on Sunday night? He looked at us and he was like, well, nobody's ever done that. That's all I needed to hear, right? I'm like, all right, well, so we went back and mapped out a plan with our lead pastor and myself and a couple others, but we didn't have anybody to lead it. So we put that plan in a filing cabinet for about a year until we had somebody come along that had the same dream we had and would fulfill and begin to get this thing off the ground. Listen to this. 3 years later, a third of that campus was on in that church sanctuary on Sunday evening, every Sunday evening. That's what pioneers do. You look for potential in the mundane. You look for opportunities where there don't seem to be any. When Crosspoint began, and we were just getting ourselves settled and trying to figure out how to work, and about two and a half years in, we had this great idea that we felt was just a part of our DNA. We thought, man, let's plant another church. We had a group of people here that, you know, were connecting down from the Pendleton area, and we had a leader that had been identified that might be able to start this, and so we began toward this plan towards helping partner and starting another church. We sent about 25 adults to go help be the seed work in that new church. People told me, Kurt, you are crazy. You guys don't have a building yet, and you're already starting, you know, sending people out. And they said it very crudely. They said, it's like a preschooler giving birth to a baby. And I'm like, well, that's crude, but that's exactly what it is, because that's what pioneers do. And even, you know, the launch pad. I mean, I'm super excited about the launch pad, but I tell you, when we were, you know, nailing down the landing on that, I'll never forget the conversation our board chair and I had as we were working on the cosign we needed to actually get the project started for our lenders. And I just said to him, I said, dude, you've got to get this cosign nailed because this is like old stuff to me now. We need to be, you know, conquering new frontiers. This is like wasting my time working with lenders. We've got like new sites to start. And you know, because we were just starting to get a dream for multi-siting. And we still have that. And we don't know where that's going to take us. It won't be here locally. It'll likely be somewhere in another part of our country where we find a demographic very similar to Fishers that needs to hear the message of Christ. Because there's people who have checked out on church but haven't checked out on God. And we can find a leader that can go in there and we can help administrate and bring our systems and everything we've learned to that community to begin to raise up a new church community. But I mean, we got new places to go. This is how my mind works. And yet what's fascinating is, you know, we wouldn't be here today. You wouldn't be here today if I didn't have key settlers in my life, key people who helped us think through, you know, how to make ourselves more guest friendly, how to get people connected, how to make this place smaller as we become bigger. And so we need both. This kind of reminds me of this passage that we find in the book of Romans. And it talks about how regardless of which one we are, pioneer or settler, how we need both. In fact, here's what the Apostle Paul says. Romans 12. It says, "For the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think with sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith that God has assigned. For as in one body we have many members, and the members do not have all the same function. So we, though many, are one body in Christ, and individually members of one another. Having gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, let us use them." He says, let us use them. So three quick bank shots on how pioneers and settlers should be working together and in partnership. Here's the first one right here. As pioneers and settlers, whichever one you are, we need to value the whole more than your part. All right, Paul says, he says, don't think of yourself more highly than you ought to think. And in science, there's this idea called confirmation bias. And that's when scientists or researchers, or really, let's be honest, you and I do this too. It's where when we see certain things in our life that we feel like are in hypothesis with how we think something's going to play out, we actually put more weight into those things than the things that we see that are disapproving our hypothesis. And so, and I think we're all guilty of that. And what Paul is saying is, he says, hey, don't just value what you're doing. You need to value the whole. See, pioneers in this room, you probably chafe when somebody comes to you and says things like, man, slow down. So let's bring a little process to what you're working on. Man, you might as well call your baby ugly, right? I mean, that's like, that just like chafes at you right there, right? But listen, that may be the very thing you as a pioneer need to hear and do in order for the vision to continue to grow and broaden, to bring structure. Those of you who are settlers in the room, it might be frustrating to you when a pioneer comes and says, hey, man, this system we're working on, it's like 80% baked. We need to move on. It's done. We got new frontiers. And you might chafe at that a little bit. You're like, whoa, it's not done. We need to finish it. But that may be the very thing that keeps the momentum of the change moving when you choose to say, I'm going to value the whole more than the part that I bring. I would have loved to have been in the room when our founding fathers were crafting those final documents of things like the Bill of Rights and the Constitution and some of those things that really organized our country today. I mean, think about it. I mean, think of, you know, all these men who had to come and lay all their stuff on the table. And I mean, think of all the compromises they had to die to. I mean, all the things that they individually wanted, and yet they had to lay those down for the sake of what? The common good. For the sake of the whole. And that's the kind of thing that helps momentum continue when a new frontier is being established. We have to think about the whole over our part. Number two, you have to deliver your part. Deliver your part. Paul says, having the gifts that differ according to the grace given to you, you know what he says? He says, use them. He says, let's use them. Let's put them into practice. Listen, if you're a pioneer here and you have dreams of, you know, some business plan that can bring new jobs to the greater Indianapolis area, listen, we need your dreams. Our community needs those things. If you're in education and you have dreams that you believe will change the way we educate kids and nobody's talking about them, we need your dreams. We need you to take those from something you've dreamed about or you've put on paper and actually put them into action. We need you to begin to share these and to change the way we educate children. Listen, if you're a settler, we need the structures that you bring. If you're good with numbers, I'm not. All right, I mean, we need you to bring structure to things here at Crosspoint. We need you to bring structures to your families, to your businesses, so you can pay the bills at the end of the day. All right, I don't think about those kinds of things. I have people that think about those things. We need you to build on the things that are already here and make them better. We need you to play your part. Whether you're a pioneer or a settler, we deliver our part. The Apostle Paul, again, talks about this in Colossians chapter 4. He says, see that you fulfill the ministry that you have received from the Lord. This is interesting because, you know, what Paul's saying is if you're a believer, if you're a follower of Jesus, if you've received grace and are in relationship with Jesus, he says you have a ministry and you've received that from the Lord. And here's the thing, most of you, you'll never have to go on a church staff to fulfill that ministry. All right, sometimes you think, oh man, I have to quit my job, go on Crosspoint team or some other team. No, you likely will never have to do that. It's one of the really cool things. Paul says, just see that the gifts you've been given, the bent you've been given, pioneer, settler, whatever your bent is, see that you fulfill that role as it's been given to you. Third thing, draw strength from diversity. So here's what I've discovered. I've discovered that pioneers grow when they at times slow down enough to allow the settlers to speak process and stability into the plan. At the same time, I've noticed that settlers grow when they're willing to risk and stretch and move a little quicker with the pioneers to keep the momentum of a project moving. All right, and so we have to value the diversity and the strengths that pioneers and settlers bring to one another. All right, in your marriage. In your marriage, you likely have some diversity with your spouse if you're married, all right? And God usually builds it that way. I mean, there's probably one of you that's a little more pioneer and one of you that's a little more settler. You need to grow from one another. I mean, Julie and I, I grow from Julie all the time. We're different. I mean, we both have pioneering spirit and we both have settler tendencies. There's places where she grows me. I mean, she's great at celebrating. Julie's a fantastic celebrator. I suck at celebrating, all right? I blew, like, her 21st birthday party. I blew kind of her 40th birthday party. I'm always, like, seeing the moment. And then I'm already looking ahead to the next thing. Julie has taught me to slow down and to celebrate. And I'm still learning to slow down and celebrate these things. You know, she's also helping me be more pioneering when it comes to vacationing. Because I'm a pioneer in much of what I do, so when it comes to vacation and downtime, I like to settle on a beach next to a pool. All right, I mean, that's my idea of vacation, and I like to settle in the same place. And she thinks our kids should see more than Disney World, and I'm like, hey, the whole world's there. You know, I mean, why do you need anything else? But she's helping our family pioneer to new places, and our kids experience new things. And so we draw off of our differences. I have the privilege to work with a great diverse team here at Crosspoint. I mean, our operations director, John, is kind of like my right-hand strategist. He's a strategist at heart. He's run a CPA firm for years and knows what it's like to go through very intense seasons where you're just running at a very fast pace. One of the things John brings to me and to our team is a sense of rhythm in intense seasons. He helps us bring stability when we're running fast. PJ, I get to work with PJ. And PJ and I are very similar. We're pioneers at heart. All right, and it's interesting because I remember, he's a settler too. He brings systems and processes, and I'll never forget our first planning sessions at Crosspoint for worship services. We're sitting around talking about, you know, some of the crazy things we wanted to do in service, things like singing Welcome to the Jungle. And I'll never forget, you know, there are a few people in that circle that were like, can we do that? Is that legal in church? And they looked at PJ, and then they looked at me, and he's like, you're the boss. I'm like, well, sure it is, because we're creating new frontiers. We're trying to get out of the old and reclaim some of the mediums of our culture and use them to connect people to God. Eric. You get to experience Eric every week up here. You know, Eric, man, Eric is wired relationally. That's why he's our connections director. Right? He sets up great dates, and he helps you get connected to volunteering around here. But you know what's interesting about Eric? No, he doesn't do the date part. But what's interesting about Eric is, you know, Eric, he works as a DJ on a nationally radio, syndicated radio program, and people feel like they know him, yet they never see his face. Because he has the ability to relate to people, to connect with people. And he brings that attentiveness to the value of connection to everything we do here at Crosspoint. My assistant Leela, my word, you experience benefit from her every week. I mean, she's our administrative backbone. I mean, the things you hold in your hands and anything you receive that's a blessing, the kind of cards. I mean, I'm not running around with my hair on fire every week because she manages my schedule. I mean, you know, she brings structure and stability. And as I think about the people I get to work with, every day, each of those people joined our team was a great day because they have a very unique role to play as we continue to pioneer and settle. We all have a role. We all have a role. And so, you know, as you think about, am I more pioneering? Am I more settling? As you think about your marriage, you think about your work context, you think about friendships, wherever you might be going after new frontiers, I want us to make some next steps here. So take out your connection cards and Eric referred to these earlier. On the back side are some next steps. And the first thing I want us to do is if you haven't figured out if you're more pioneer or settler, I want you to just kind of decide that right now. Which one do you think you are? Go ahead and mark that or circle that on the card. I mean, just kind of figure it out. You need to figure it out for yourself. But, man, I would love to see this as well. So just mark that if you would. I hope all of us will mark one of those two on there. And then as you think about that, I want you to think about, am I valuing the whole more than my part? All right, a couple questions to ask, all right? And this might be relevant for your marriage. This might be relevant in your business. This may be relevant in a circle of friends. I mean, there may be things that are important to you, and you may be holding up the process because you're trying to get everybody to see your way, and you just need to say, okay, I'm going to value the whole more than I'm going to value the part. Second thing, are you delivering on your part? All right, are you flowering where you're planted? See, Paul says, hey, all of us have something to bring. And the question is, are you bringing what you're wired to bring? If you're not, then you need to start bringing it. Right? Whether it's here to Crosspoint or to your family or to your business or to a circle of friends or a new venture you're going after, you need to bring it. And then third, are you valuing diversity? Are you valuing diversity? Now, a little encouragement to married people here this morning. I promise you, if you are married, you are not married to someone who thinks exactly like you, all right? If you are, man, I want to meet you after service today. Come out and introduce yourself. I would love to meet you if you are exactly alike, all right? But the question is, are you allowing your spouse to coach you in the diversity that you find between the two of you? Are you allowing your spouse to coach you? One of the greatest examples that I can think of is I think about just this value of strength from diversity and valuing, you know, the whole more than the part. It comes from, you know, again, that fulcrum moment in our country's history with the civil rights movement. You know, Dr. Martin Luther King, one of the things many people don't realize is Dr. Martin Luther King did not intend to give the I Have a Dream speech that day he marched in Washington. That wasn't his plan. His remarks were actually going down an entirely different course for the first 10 minutes of his speech. In fact, he was talking about things like the debt that society owes to those who have been discriminated against and how the bank has sent the note back and, you know, and it said, hey, insufficient funds, this isn't right. I mean, he was trying to make this analogy, yeah, this metaphor, and he was just doing his thing. And there's a guy by the name of Clarence Jones who was Martin Luther King's speechwriter, and he was on the stage with him that day. And he said there was something that happened at the end of his speech that only one or two of us even heard. And it was this moment where Mahalia Jackson, who was this gospel singer, some would say is the best gospel singer ever, you know, was on the platform. And Martin Luther was kind of ending his speech, and people were applauding, and it was expected that he was about ready to send them out on their way for the day. And she said to Martin, she said, hey, Martin, tell him about the dream. And Clarence Jones, a speechwriter, said as soon as he heard that, his posture changed. And he pushed his remarks aside. And the I Have a Dream speech wasn't spontaneous, all right? He had done this before. He just didn't plan to do it that day. But he immediately lunged into his speech. He said, I have a dream. He said, I have a dream that, you know, one day this nation will rise up and that there will be truth to the true meaning of its creed that will hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. He said, I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. You want to say, I have a dream. And this became one of the greatest moments in our country's history. And here's the thing. You'll never know your part. You'll never know what your part is and what it means to the movement unless you're willing to value the whole over your part. Whether you're willing to, you know, bring it to deliver your part, or whether you're willing to draw strength from diversity. I mean, Mahalia Jackson, she didn't realize that if she wouldn't have said, hey, Martin, tell him about the dream, it may have never happened that day. And so I don't know what God's leading you to. I don't know what frontiers God's planting in your hearts. But listen, I want you to believe that they are possible, right? God can bring those things to fruition. All right, let's pray. God, I just want to thank you for the great, great picture of how we're called to some new frontier. I mean, you call all of us to something new. We're in the midst of it right now, but God, this isn't the finality of it. It's a continual calling, and you've given us a role. And God, I just pray that of all the places you're calling us, of all the frontiers that we're going after, that, God, we would be people who value the whole, that we would be people who bring our part, and we would be people who value the diversity and the strength that comes from diversity. God, I just want to pray a special prayer of blessing right now. I want to pray a prayer of encouragement to all those new ventures that are just in the seed stage in some of our hearts right now. It might be a business plan, God. It might be, you know, a dream to add a new child to our family or to adopt a child. Whatever it might be, God, I just pray for every new venture, God, and I pray that that seed may be the start of something absolutely.